Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday evening shiur for Parsha Shlach. I'd like to speak this evening about a subject which is close to my heart, the subject of Tchelis in Tzitzis, but specifically after some general introduction to focus on the basic question, as I've put in the title, identifying Tchelis, can outside evidence help or is a Mesorah necessary? Can a mitzvah be kind of reestablished, rediscovered, so to speak, a mitzvah that's been lost? Can we reestablish it based on scientific, archaeological, or other non-Torah type evidence or not? That's the question. To begin, if I can mute, that'll be helpful. Can I give some of my feedback? But to begin with a, we'll begin with the psukim and Parsha Shlach, which concludes the last five psukim. The last five psukim of Parsha Shlach comprise what we refer to as the third parsha of Kriya Shema. So it says over there in the first of the sources, Ramashem, Shalom, etc. So it says in Pasuk Lamed Ches, Perek Tezvav, B'midbar, the last five psukim, Lamed Zayin, to Memal, Pasuk Lamed Ches says, Dabrel B'nei Yisrael, etc. And it says, you have to have tzitzis on your garments, V'nosnu al tzitzis hakonof pesil techeles. You have to have a thread of techeles on your tzitzis. What exactly is Tchelis? That's the first question. Again, we've spoken about that in past years, so I'm not going to go into great detail, but just an overview. So Rashi, there in Chumash, in Pasuk Lamed Ches, says Tchelis, Tseva Yorok, Shel Chilozom. Okay, it's a color that's greenish. Modern Hebrew, Yorok, means green. It doesn't necessarily mean green in Biblical or even Rabbinic Hebrew. The Gemara speaks in one place about blood that has a yarok, a greenish color. It's not the type of blood that we have, or might be referred to mucus. But anyway, it's a paler, perhaps a yellow type of color, but it's a greenish, yellowish type of color that comes from something called the chilozon. But that's what Rashi says, emphasizing the word yarok. Two psukim later in Pasuk Mem Aleph, the last pasuk in Perek Tezvav of Parsha Shlach and Bamidbar, Rashi there quotes, Misodosh Ramosha Darshan Hatakti, I quote from Ramosha Darshan, Psil Techeles, what does the word Psil Techeles have to do with? So play on words, Shikul, Psil is Shikul, the loss, the loss of life of the Bechoros, because Targumo Shchul Tichla, the words Shikul, Kasher Shacholti, Shacholti, a grievous loss. So it refers to a loss of the Bechoros, referring to Makas Bechoros at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And when was that Makkah? When was that Makkah? Rashi says, the name of Rabbi Shadashin, Umakosam Haisabalaila. It was at night. So therefore, V'chein Tseva HaTcheles, Domel et Tseva Rakia, HaMashchil Eis Erev. It's the color of the sky at night. So it's a blue color that's not the same as Yorok. So Rashi, in one place, in Nar Sedra quotes Yorok. Another place, he quotes it, the color of the sky at night. Rashi gets that latter approach from the Sifrei and Bamidbar Piska Tekuf Tesvav, source number three, Rav Shimon Elazar Omer. He says it's called Tchelis, has to do with the time when the Mitzriim died, the loss of the firstborn, and that happened in the middle of the night, as it says in Parshas Bo, Shmos Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Chav Tes, source four, Vahibach Tzia Laila, Vashem Iko Kol B'chor, Beretz Mitzrayim, etc., etc. So according to that approach, the color of Tchelis is not Yorok, but it's a color of the sky towards nighttime. The Radak, in one of his works, Radak has a work called the Sefer HaSharoshim, Hebrew, like a dictionary kind of work, and he has on the root, Tof Chaf Lamed, Tcheles, Psil Tcheles, in source 5, he writes, Hu Ayin Sheniko Belaz Blav, in brackets, Azuro, Azur, it's a bluish color, or Ultramarine, okay? So these are different shades of blue or blue-green type of color, Azur, Ultramarine, and he says, Hu Tzavu B'dam Chilozon, it comes from this creature called the Chilozon. The Gemara in Chulin, Daf Pei Tes and Aleph, also in Menachos, has a famous comparison. The Gemara asks in source number 8-6, the Tanya of Meir Omer, Manish Tana Tcheles Mikol HaTzivonim, why was Tcheles selected of all the colors? Why was Tcheles selected to be the one that's that color that's affixed to the corner of the tzitzis? So the Gemara says, Mipnesha Tcheles Dom Aliyam, Tcheles is similar in color to the sea, the Yam Dom Al Rakia, and the sea is similar to the color of the sky. Rakia Dom Al Evan Sapir, the sky is the color of a could be sapphire, okay, sapir, Evan Sapir, like sapphire stone, also blue, and Evan Sapir, Dom Al Kisa Kovod, and that's the color of the heavenly throne, and they bring it out from a pusuk, okay, Vayur Salav Kayisol Vesachas Aglav, another pusuk from Yechezkel, we'll see the pusuk in a second. Rashi explains what this Tcheles is. Tcheles comes from a creature, comes from the sea. Rashi in source 7, Chulin, Pei Testament Aleph, wondered, Manish Tana Tcheles is Kika Torah Latzitzis. Why of all colors is Tcheles with the Tzitzis? Because Tcheles Domal Yam, Shechilozon, Bromin Hayam, the Chilozon comes from the sea, and it comes out once every X number of years, and it has all these similarities and colors, and it reminds us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, reminds us of the mitzvahs and so on. The pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim that the Gemara quoted, Shmos Parakav Dalet, Psukim Tes and Yud, when Nadav and Avihu went up along with Moshe and Aaron at the time of Mamad Har Sinai, 70 elders, they went up part of the way up the mountain, and the cryptic pasuk, Parakav Dalet, pasuk Yud, we don't know what it means, pasuk Yud, but you're all, it's okay, so they saw God. Somehow they perceived HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the sachas raglav, under his feet, as it were, kemaseh livnas ha-sapir, something, a stone, which like sapphire, u'che'etzem ha-shamayim la-tor, bright blue like the sky. And there's a pasuk Yechezkel, parak ala pasuk chavav, which we read on the first day of Shavuos, speaking also about Yechezkel's vision of the heavenly throne, and it says also there in 9, u'mal rakiya shar oshim kemari evan sapir, so that's a sapphire, again, a different type of a bluish color. Okay, you look in the Chizkuni, in his comment on that pasuk in Mishpatim, by Shmos Parakav Dal pasuk Yud, in source 10, the Chizkuni says, "Kemaseh libnas ha-sapir, yesh sapir shachor," there are darker sapphires, but this is a lighter one, "Kein tcheles bloy," blue, belaz. Okay, so he specifically mentioned blue. Okay, and that's something that we recognize in etzem ha-shamayim. What it means is, what does that mean? Mare ha-shamayim, concludes the Chizkuni, zakim at the horam ha-anonim, when it's a clear, what we call a clear blue sky, no clouds and so on, a clear blue sky. That's the idea. So that's the blue that he identifies. Now, so far, nobody said anything about green, which is what Rashi says in our Sedra back in source 2 on the word tcheles in Perk Tesvot Pasuk Lamed Ches, tcheles and Seba Yarok, but there is a Yerushalmi in Brachas, a parallel Yerushalmi to that Bavli in Chulin Peites, which compares the tcheles to the sea and the sea to the sky, etc. The Yerushalmi in Brachas is a similar Gemara. Perak Aleph Halacha Beis Tanim Shem Rabeir Risim Osa. First of all, you look back in our psukim, so you're supposed to look at it and reminds you of all the mitzvahs. But take a look carefully. Pasuk Lamed Tes back in source 1. Vahalachem Letzitzis, right? You'll have tzitzis Urisim Oso. Now we will see it. What's the antecedent of that pronoun? I would say tzitzis. The only thing is tzitzis is Lashon Nekeva. With tzitzis, it would say Vahalachem Letzitzis Urisim Oso. So what's the Oso? Lashon Zohar. So presumably it's referring to the psil, the thread mentioned in the end of the previous pasuk. Okay, anyway, you see it. So it's a risim or so. Magid says, Rishalmi shakol makayim, it's a tzitzit kilim akabo pnei ashkina. And it says, shatcheles dom ayam v'yam, ayam, it says over here, domel asovim. Okay, asovim is grist, that is green. And sometimes the sea, but certainly by the coast, does look green. Okay, so, and again, we saw in the Radak, ultramine, ultramarine, azure, different colors and so on. So that's the Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi quotes a different pasuk in Yechezkel, Paragud Pasuk Aleph, printed 13. Again, sapphire. But there are different shades of sapphire, as we already saw. The Mare upon him, that's by the author of the Pnei Moshe, on the Yerushalmi. He wrote the Pnei Moshe is a, there's no Rashi on the Yerushalmi. So we have on the Yerushalmi different commentaries. Only one commentary that's on the Yerushalmi cover to cover, and that's the Pnei Moshe. Okay. In the late 1700s, the Pnei Moshe. And he also, that's a Rashi style commentary. He also wrote a Tosfos style commentary on Yerushalmi called the Mare HaPanim 14. So there in Brochus in Perak Aleph Halacha Beis, he notes the distinction that the Bavli skips the step comparing it to the green grass. Okay, well, maybe it's bluegrass, you know. But anyway, he says it's a different shade. But he notes that there's a difference between the different colors. And he mentions, according to the Bavli, look on the second line of 14, Loshan Ashkenaz blue. It's blue. But according to here in the Yerushalmi, it's Virda, Bilaz. Virda is, you know, Verdi is green in Italian, right? And at the end, Kein Asom Loshan Ashkenaz, green. You see that there in the Mari upon him. And at the end, he mentions perhaps it's a different shade, Shakur in yellow. Loshan Ashkenaz Yiddish is Gel, it's yellow. So anyway, there are different questions of what the Tcheles is. Now, the fact of the matter is, you have all these, the Ramban here in Parsha Shlach, Perk Tazvav, Pasuk Lamed Ches, the Kleyokar on the same Pasuk point out, that says in the Gemara, Dome. Dome doesn't mean it has to be exactly the same. It's reminiscent. It looks like this color. It looks like the color of the sea. It looks like the color of the sky. That's how Ramban points out. Dimyon, Gamagevin, Tcheles also looks like that, and that color, especially with distance and so on. That's why it's called Tcheles. That's what the Kleyokar also says. It's Dome la Dome. It doesn't mean it has to be exactly the color of the sky, but it means it's that general color. All right, the Ramban Paskins in Perak Beis, Hilchos Tipsis, Halacha Aleph 17. Tcheles hamur b'tor b'chol makom hu atzemer, it's wool, atzavua, which is dyed, kepisuch shebe kachol. That's a question exactly what that means, but he does say kachol, right, most likely referring to a bluish color. And he writes, again, the brightness of the sky. Now, we have different, you know, we have sky blue. In English, that's a color called sky blue. Okay, but there's a difference, obviously, between the sky at noontime and the sky in the evening. It's blue, but different shades. I just came back from a walk, and, you know, the sky is all kinds of different beautiful colors. Not the same as it looks at noon on a clear day. So that's what the Rambam says. It's a simple reading of the Rambam. I acknowledge that others read it differently, but that's what he says, Perek Beis, Halacha Aleph, that it's the color of a bright blue sky. In Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, the Rambam discusses this also, because Chelas is not relevant only for tzitzis, but it's also relevant for some of the big day kahuna. And for other things in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, the Tchelas is needed there too. So he discussed it in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash. Perkes Halacha Gimel 18, the Rambam writes, Okay. The Radvaz points out in the Tshuva, Chelak Hesim and Mem Ches 19, Yesh Lomar Shesh Geven Tchelas Shu Shochar Harbe, even within Tchelas, there's a range. Like in blue also, there's a range. Right? Even in Tchelas, Tchelas is not all everything exactly the same color. The range is different colors. All right. The reason we have all this discussion is because, leaving out the Gemara, but the Rishonim who talk about it, it would appear, never saw it. Okay? They're extrapolating, understanding, based on Psukim and based on what the Gemara does say. As we'll see, Tchelas was around, certainly in the time of the Gemara, but it was not around at the time, by the time of the Rishonim, and certainly by the time of the Achronim. So they're extrapolating, figuring out what the Tchelas most likely is. But Rashi didn't see it, we assume. The Rambam didn't see it. Okay. So therefore, there's some discussion as exactly what the color is, but it seems to be a bluish type of color with, you know, different shade possibilities. One thing we saw already that Rashi and others mentioned is that this Tchelas comes from a creature called the Chilazon. And there's a Tosefta in Menachos Perek Tes Halacha Vav 20, which says explicitly, Tcheles ein kshera ela mechalozon. Tcheles must come from the chalozon, this creature called the chalozon, shalom in a chalozon psula. It comes from some other source, and there's ways to make it synthetically. There's even ways they knew about in the days of the Gemara, which you could take a plant derivative and make the dye out of it. In fact, the indigo plant, and indigo is also a blue color. The indigo plant can also, it's called Kalaila in the Gemara, indigo, which most assume is indigo. Indigo can produce this color as well. However, the Tosefta says it must come dafka from this excretion, or this secretion, this liquid from the chilazon, from a plant that's no good. Now, you can't easily tell it apart, although the Chazal intimate in one place that the chilazon from the tchelas, if you make it out of the plant, it'll fade somewhat. And again, there's very little chemical difference between the plant indigo and the tchelas that people use today. But again, except for the plant derivatives and so on that are in the mixture, but tell them apart easily. But often the other ones faded. Tchelas from the chalazon doesn't fade. So there were wise guys who sold tchelas expensive, who sold the tchelas from the plant indigo, which was cheaper to produce from the plant derivative. And then you bought it, and then you found in the wash or whatever, it faded. Unfortunately for you, by the time that happened, the salesman was long gone from town. Right, so you know. Therefore, the pasuk says, you know, we ended up the last pasuk in the sedra, pasuk me'malaf perak tesvav ani yeshol. I know who's really wearing the right thing, doing the right thing. Okay. Anyway, what is this chilazon? That's the next question. Okay, we can figure out what the color. We don't know what the chilazon is either. You know, because if the Rishonim didn't see it, why didn't they see it? And the chilazon didn't disappear, did it? Well, maybe they didn't know what the chilazon was because they weren't sure. We'll see how that came about. But the Gemara tells you what the chilazon is. Mem Dalad Amin Aleph Menachas, Tana Rabbanan. Chilazon Zehu, it's a type of creature that Gufo Domalayam. Its body somehow resembles the sea. Ubriyoso Domaladag, and its physical structure is like a fish. Ve'ola Echad L'Shivim Shana, comes out and swarms once every 70 years. Uvedoma, and with its blood, Sovin Tcheles, you die Tcheles, Eleficha, don't be coming out, that's why it's so expensive. What does it mean? Gufo Rash says, Menachos Mem Dalad Aleph 22. Mare Gufo Tavnis, do you know its physical structure is similar to the sea, and similar to the sea, and somehow otherwise it's bones or whatever look like a fish and so on. That's why it's very expensive. That's what the chilazon is. Okay, now people used to trap these things, whatever the chilazon is. We find that in Masechet Shabbos, the Mishnah in Shabbos Daf Ayin Gimel and Aleph, where it lists off the 39 malachas, Ovis malachas arbaim chaser achas, 39, 40 less one. Among them are kosher and matir, tying and untying. So we know that all the malachas that are forbidden on Shabbos are derived what they used to do in the Mishkan. What did tying and untying have to do with anything in building the Mishkan? So Gemara says in Ayin Dalav Beis in 324, El Amarovi, Tamar Biloy, Shekain, Sode, Chilazon, Kosher, Matirin. People, when they want to trap these chilazans, they would have to tie and untie ropes for knots. Rashi explains why would they need tzade chilazan? Why do you have to trap the chilazan? So Rashi says litzboa hat tcheles bedamo, because again we mentioned before for certain things in the Mishkan you needed tcheles, so you had to get these creatures in order to manufacture the dye. And Rashi says again, who come in dog cotton like a small fish, and the next Rashi koshin matirin, because they would make nets. You know, you've seen probably if you go to Cape Cod, these places they're trapping lobster, they have these things, these traps that they lower in on some type of rope to the bottom of the ocean, and then they catch them and pull them back up, right? So they had a similar system in the olden days, and we find in even non-Jewish literature, Pliny the Elder and Aristotle and others, they used to trap these types of creatures in some type of a net that they would construct, and they would lower it into the water and then pull it back up. That's where kosher matirin comes from. Okay, so obviously they needed this for the Mishkan, and it said they would trap these creatures. The Aruch in Os Ches 26, the Aruch was an early dict, probably the earliest dictionary of Talmudic terms that we have from Nosson Bala Aruch, one of the kind of borderline Gaonim Rishonim. He writes in the entry of Chilazon 26, Yesh Mefarshin Chalazon Hu Tavlul. It's a snail. Okay, it's a snail. Now, because, you know, Rashi said a fish, and the Gemara seemed to say a fish, but it's important to understand the Gaon points this out in one place, that a fish does not have to mean what we call a fish. Fish can mean in rabbinic literature a sea creature. So a snail can also be called a dog for this purpose. It's not a fish, but it is a sea creature. Okay, so that's what the Aruch says. It's a type of snail. Okay, Rashi in Sanhedrin, Sadi Aleph Mid Aleph 27, okay, refers to the word chilazon. Toloas, it's a worm. Sheyotzi min hayam. Well, if you think about a snail, you take off the shell, it looks like a worm. Right, when it's the inside of a snail, looks like a worm. So there, Rashi seems to be agreeing that, you know, without the shell, it's like a tolas, okay? And vitzovim midamo treles, and use its blood, okay? And blood doesn't have to mean blood. It means anything can secrete any liquid from the body, okay? That's how you make treles, okay? Now, so the question is, why don't we wear treles today? What happened? I mean, that's the $64,000 question here, is what happened? Okay, why do we have to have a whole debate exactly what the color of tcheles was? A greenish color, it's aquamarine, it's ultramarine, it's azure, it's blue like the sky, it's blue like the sky at night, it's blue like the sky at noon. Well, all these discussions, okay? Let's just manufacture tcheles today, and we'll see what color it is. Or the second question, so let's find the chilazon, okay? We'll take the secretion out of the sack that's inside, and whatever color they'll die, then we'll know what that color it is. What's the problem? Obviously, along the way, something happened where we lost our understanding not only what the color was, but also what exactly is the chilazon, which creature. It's a sea creature that we know. And we have some descriptions of the Gemara. It looks a little bit like this, and it looks like the sea, but you know, the color is like the sea, but what exactly is it? We don't know exactly. Why don't we know? What in the world happened? So there is a Gemara, okay, a medrash actually, in Bamidbar Rabbah, here in our Sedrin Shlach, Parsha Yud Zayin, Simen Hay. Okay, that nowadays we're supposed to wear tzitzis of lavan and tcheles. But look at the end of 28. Ve'achshav ein lanu ela lavan shatcheles nignaz. We don't have any more just nothing other than white, because the tcheles was nignaz. Okay, now usually nignaz means put in a geniza, intentionally put away. But that doesn't, the Medrash Tanchuma here in Shlach also says that, in Os Tesvav. Okay, the real mitzvah is to wear lavan and tcheles. But that's Amos. I when is that? Because you have tcheles. You have tcheles. The achshav ein lanu el lovan shat tcheles nignaz, and therefore mitzvah beloved. The mitzvah is only to wear white. That's what most people do for many, many, many centuries. Okay. What do you mean nignaz? Nignaz does not have to mean it was intentionally gotten rid of. Okay. There is a Gemara in Psachim, the details of which are important. Of samach beis and beis. The Gemara talks about a sefer called the Sefer Yuchsin, where they had certain family records and so on. Genealogy records and so on, and apparently that sefer was nignaz. Rama Barav Huda Amarav Psachim Samach Beis and Beis Source 30 Amarav Miyom She Nignaz Sefer Yuchsin. So Rashi says Nignaz 31 Rashi Psachim Samach Beis and Beis Nignaz Nishtakach. It was forgotten. It was lost. Doesn't mean that it was intentionally removed from circulation. Usually we speak about a geniza, you know, something you bury in Seamus, you're intentionally removing from circulation. But that, I'm just pointing out, it doesn't have to mean that. So it could well be by the tcheles also. It means it was not intentionally removed from circulation, but it was forgotten. Okay, now, when did that happen? Not clear. However, we do find the following. There's a Gemara Menachos, Naf Mem, Gimel, Aleph 32. Mar, and Rashi there says in 33, Mar is the name of a Chacham, that was his name or his title. I see Tchilta b'shnei Rabachai. He had tcheles in the years of Rav Achai. Okay, Rab Mishka Shemong, Rab who came from Maru, came from this and such a place, had Tchelis in the days of Rav Achai. How late is that? Well, it's in the Gemara, but just to emphasize, the Gemara was completed in approximately the year 550 of the Common Era. Ravina and Rashi are so far they're the end of the period of the Gemara. However, as the people studying Gemara know, there are passages in the Gemara which seem to be put in later by a group of Rabbanim called Rabbanon Savoroi, the Savoroim, who lived roughly from 550 to 750. We don't know much about them. They did edit the Gemara. Wherever you have two dots at the end of a sugya in the Gemara, they put that in. Other things they put in, so some Gemaras are later, some Gemaras are known are later. Okay, so Parma Rav Achai lived in this, in the kind of like the Saboroi or early Gaonic period. Gaonim were from 750 to 1000. And again, I stress, it's not like they woke up one day and made an announcement. Okay, from now on, everybody's Gaonim. And then they woke up, and from now on, everybody's Rishonim. That's how we categorize. In any event, there's a Tosus in Zvachim, Kuf Beis Mabeis, Dilam Asli Parach Rav Achai, 34, Tosus says, B'chol Mokom Lishonim Meshur, it's a different type of expression, because usually Parach is not the word used by the Gemara. The Gemara uses the word like Mesve, or these type of words. Here it uses Parach, because it's a later addition. And we talk, Kach HaOmer Ben Shmuel, says Tosus, Duhu Rav Achai Shosa Shiltus. That's Rav Achai Gon who wrote the Shiltas. Shahayomi Rabbanon Savaroi, the boss of Ravina and Ravashi. He came after Ravina and Ravashi. Okay, that's what he says. And the Geras of Rav Shira Gon, which is really the first sort of comprehensive history book that we have. I mean, Seder Olam's older, but more detailed history book covers more ground till the days of the Gon, Rav Shira Gon, the entry of Rabbanon Savaroi. He mentions the names of some of them, some of the famous Rabbanon Savaroi. He says, Kagon, the second line of 45, okay, be that as it may, until around the time of the Gaonim, going back to the Gemara in Menachos, and Mem Gimel Aleph said that they had Tchelis in the days of Rav Achai. So whether it's the same Rav Achai wrote the Shiltas or the early Gaonim or the Saboraim, but certainly in that time, until that time, you had Tchelis. There is in 36 a tshuva from the Gaonim in the collection called Shari Tshuva Simon Kuf Nun Tes. 36, it says, Kishahoya Tchelis B'Yad Yisrael, speaks about in the past tense. When they had Tchelis, meaning by that time, and the Tshuva was gone, and they didn't have it anymore. So, right, because they say, when they used to have it, they used to put Tchelis, here's what they used to do, etc., etc. But bottom line, you ready? The Gaonim are talking about it as if it's no longer extant. And they're saying, Kishahoya, when they used to have it. So some point between the end of the Gemara and the time of the Gaonim is when Tchelis disappeared. The Rif also writes, in the Halachos Ketanos of the Rif, Hilchos Tzitzis, Dav Yud Gimel Beis, in the page of the Rif, in the back of Menachos 37, but in the last long Tchelis, the Rif is among the early, the Rishonim, around the year 1000 or so, the Rif writes, in his time, they used to have Tchelis, but we no longer have it anymore. Tosus in Menachos, Lamed Ches Mem Beis, Dil Maskel, Ella 38, Aha, Somkin She'ein Lanu Tchelis, Matil Lava, we don't have Tchelis anymore at the time of the Balei Tosus, there's no more Tchelis. The Rambam writes in the Tshuva, Simen Kuf Lamed Ches, in 39, okay, he says, it also talks about, except on the second line of 39, we only have white, we don't have more tcheles. The Ramban, the Melchamas and Shabbos, Tav Yud, Beis, and Aleph, and the Dapei Arif, 40, he talks about Bahari, Avos Kadmonim, Mimos HaGaonim, our early ancestors, yet for the days of Gaonim, would go out with a talus, Yesh Balovin, below tcheles. They had white, but no more tcheles. That's what Ramban is talking about at the time of the Gaonim. The Rosh also writes his Hilchos Tzitzis in Siman Tesvav, and the Hilchos Ketanos Hilchos Tzitzis 41 also speaks about, you look in the second last line, Mirror the Dafka Kishesh Tchelis, that's talking about how you tie it. And again, there are various interesting details, which I encourage you to look at. It's very fascinating, not for right now, though. He also speaks about the Tchelis as if we no longer have it. And so, too, to come back full circle to our Parsha Rabbeinu Bachya here in Parsha Shlach, on Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Lamed Ches 42, the Achshav She'ein Lanu Tchelis, Osin love and below tchelis. Rabbi Nabach also, we have no tchelis anymore. And he says that, really the tzitzis and tchelis, when they had the tchelis, you'd have to have tchelis. It would be like a lulav without an esrog and so on. The second line of 42, but tchelis ma'akman zezeb is man shahar tchelis motzuk. Aber achshav she'en lanu tchelis, what do? We put on white and that's it, because that's the main thing. And the Shulchan Aruch as well. Okay, in Aruch Chaim, Hilchos Siman Tes, Siv Beis, and Hilchos Tzitzis, the Shulchan Aruch also writes, all right, that, Bisman Hazeh, the Lekat Tchelis, and so on again, how you put it on, and the Groh, the Biar Groh, and Siman Tes there in Aruch Chaim, Sif Beis, writes, Bisman Hazeh refers to that Medrashin Shlach. So we know that already in the days of the Rishonim, the big Rishonim that we always quote, the Rif and the Ram and the Ramban and the Rosh, and all the Rishonim, they did not have Tchelis. They speak about it in past tense. So what happened? It disappeared at some point, so we don't know what the color is. We don't know exactly what the chalazon is that the tchelos was manufactured from. So what exactly happened? So it's unclear. Orech HaGolos, because Jews were scattered all over the place, maybe that played a role. There's a very fascinating comment Ramban makes in Parshas Tetzaveh, source 46, in Perkov Ches Hashmos Pasuk Beis, based on a Pasuk Milas Esther. Okay, in Pasuk Milas Esther, we all know the Pasuk. It's one of the Pasuk we say out loud, the Pasuk Agula, Perk Ches of Megillas Esther, Pasuk Tesvav. This is after the plot was exposed and so on. Mordechai Yotzam Lefnei HaMelech Uvush Malchus Techeles Vachur. Mordechai dressed up in royal garb, and he went out, and one of the things he was wearing was tchelis. In other words, tchelis was a royal color. Okay, in fact, we sing on Purim, Shoshanas Yaakov, Tzalav Samecha, Berosam Yachad, tchelis Mordechai. Right? And Mordechai wore tchelis. Not for tzitzis, necessarily, or I mean, not only for tzitzis, but he wore it because it was considered Levush Malchus. So the Ramban writes, and Ramban lived in the mid-1200s, Ramban writes in his time, this is in Parshat Tzaveh, Par Kochas, Pasuk Beis, by the Big Day Kahuna, Lechavro Sifaris. Oh, look what he writes, fascinating, 46. Uscheles gam hayom, lo yorim ish es yodo lilbosh, chutz mi melech goyim. Even in our time, writes the Ramban, nobody dares wear tcheles unless you're royalty. Apparently, tcheles, even in the days of Ramban, and we have non-Jewish sources, indicate that it was a royal color. And we have a color in English called royal blue. Okay, today you can wear whatever color you want, but in certain societies, at certain times, we know that in Roman times, the lower class people wore plain white garments. Okay, colors, which were expensive, you had to dye them and so on, not always so easy. That was reserved for the aristocracy. That was reserved for the nobility. And people, we have it in English an expression, you know, you earn your stripes. Heard that expression, right? A soldier earns his stripes. Yeah, more colors on you, that's more dignified. That's emblematic of a higher rank. So apparently, starting in Roman times, or at some point, okay, it became forbidden for a commoner to wear this garment. And that looks like from the Ramban is what happened. It was a royal garment. And again, the Ramban is writing his own time. Nobody would dare wear that color today unless you're a royal person, unless you're from, you're from the aristocracy. Look at the words again. Tcheles gam hayom lo yorim ishes yadu lubosh chutz mi melech goyim. The non-Jewish kings, they're allowed to. We don't wear it. So that may well have contributed significantly to the fact that Jews had no choice but to stop using tchelis because it was against the law and would get them into trouble because they would be usurping the royal garment, the royal blue. We have in English navy blue, right? You got to be in the navy to wear those colors, right? So that's the idea, very possibly, as to what happened over the centuries, and simply the recipe, so to speak, was lost. Because once again, it was not something that people could wear, and therefore they couldn't preserve it. So be that as it may, again, there may be other reasons, but Lamaisa, it was lost. I do want to say full disclosure, there's a Sifrei in Parshas Zos HaBrocha at the end of the Chumash in Piska Shin Nun Dalet. It tells a story that Rabbi Yossi once met somebody who had been selling tchelis. And anyway, it says in the Gudel of that discussion, it says at the end of the first line and then top of the next page, Bimkomo Amarti Niko Shagonuz L'Tzadikim Losid Lovo. Now we're going to put the tchelis away for the tzaddikim, lasid lavo. The Arizal writes in his Shara Kamanos Inyan Tzitzis Drush Dalad 48, Unavar Tchila Tzitzis Unogim Bisman She Beis Hamikdash Kayim, implying that only when the Beis Hamikdash stands, then we can wear tchelis. So that's a point to keep in mind. Okay, so therefore there's no purpose in trying to reconstruct it or put it on today. It's reserved for tzaddik. According to this Medrash, it's reserved lasid lavo in the future, Mashiach Zeit, and so on. Then we'll worry about tchelis again. Or you have the Arizal statement, which implies it was only in the days of the Beis HaMikdash that you could wear. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash today. But I did quote from a Tshuva L'Chassam Sofer, Chelek Orchaim Simon Nun Aleph, okay, source 49. It quotes somebody who says, quoted Kisvei Arizal, and says, listen, you can't mix up Divrei Kabbalah with Halacha. I'm not going to derive Halacha with Divrei Kabbalah. You know, the Arizal wrote everything based on Kabbalistic insights, and it's a separate area. But the question now becomes, and the key question I want to speak about for the remainder of this year, is the question of, okay, so the tchelis, for whatever the reason, the tchelis color exactly, we don't know what color it is. We lost the tradition as to what the chilazon is. So now the question is, can we put it back together? Can we go out? Can somebody go out and say, all right, we're going to try and work hard to rediscover what it was, and we'll put tchelis on our tzitzis again. So the person who dedicated a lot of time to this in the late 1800s was Rabbi Gershon Henoch Liner, who was known as the Radziner Rebbe. And the Radziner Rebbe, who was a self-educated genius, okay, decided to pursue and find out, I'm going to find out what this chilazon is, and how you make it into a blue dye. And we're going to revitalize, reintroduce, reinvigorate the mitzvah tzitzis once again. The Radzina Rebbe spent a lot of time on it. He's a Gaon Olam. He wrote Sfarma. I have this from. They're available here. Reprinted, nice print, everything else. Okay, so he wrote a safe Sfarma on this subject. And he basically came to the conclusion after taking a trip to Italy to an aquarium. And he met up with a chemist there who assisted him and so on. And he came to the conclusion that the source of the tcheles, the genuine chilozin, is what's called a common cuttlefish. Type of fish, a common fish, the cuttlefish. And therefore, he produced a dye from this cuttlefish that he insisted was the authentic tcheles. He came back to Radzin in Europe, and his chassidim, you know, the Rebbe says, there's not much choice. The Rebbe says, you put it on. So they put it on. A certain Breslover, and to this day, the Radzina chassidim, Breslover chassidim, who affixed tcheles on this dye. It's a very bright blue. It's not the same that I wear and that others wear, but it's a very bright type of blue. And that's the conclusion of the Radzina Rebbe's efforts. Okay, now, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, Rav Herzog, who was the first chief rabbi, the first rabbi Rashi, Ashkenazi rabbi Rashi, and Eretz Yisrael, Rav Kook was the first rabbi Rashi. Rav Kook didn't live to see the Hakamas HaMedina, the establishment of the state in 1948. So the Rav, and Ashkenazi Rav at the time was Rav Herzog. And Rav Herzog was also another one of these self-taught, self-educated geniuses. Rav Herzog, also one of these people who knew everything, knew science very well. In fact, he had a PhD. Rav Herzog had a PhD in science from the University of Dublin. He was originally, before he came to our show, was the chief rabbi of Ireland. And he got his PhD. And his PhD thesis was on a topic called, and you can get it, I have the book here, it's called Hebrew Porphyrology. The term that he coined, the study of Hebrew purple, Jewish colors, and explains based on psukim and science and how colors bond and, you know, all this type of stuff. And I acknowledge I don't understand the science of it. It's not my area. But anyways, of Herzog's area, Herzog felt that the Radzina Rebbe was mistaken. Not through any fault of his own, but he said, in effect, the Radzina Rebbe was duped by the chemist was unscrupulous because the chemist injected an ingredient which was what made it blue, and you could have done that with anything, not just the cuttlefish. You didn't really need the cuttlefish, and therefore it was not the cuttlefish. Herzog said it was wrong, and he came to a different conclusion, which we'll see in a moment, just an irony of history. I mentioned in the past, an irony of history after the Holocaust, when the community of Radzin, like most of Europe, was destroyed, so they tried to reconstitute their community in Eretz Yisrael, and they wanted to, you know, restart manufacturing tcheles again. But the dye masters and so on, who had been in Radzin were all killed off, and they didn't have anybody who knew how to do it. Now, Herzog never met the Radzina Rebbe. The Radzina Rebbe just died before Herzog got involved in this. But Herzog had corresponded with the Hasidim and Radzin about their process, and he had copious notes. So the Radzina Hasidim, after the war, came to the Radzina Rebbe and asked him to to provide, would he lend them the notes and so on, which he readily did. And therefore, they were able to reconstruct how they made the tcheles. So it's irony because of Herzog demonstrated that he was wrong. The Rebbe was wrong. But it's because of his notes that they preserved their tradition. All right, that they weren't interested in Herzog. They weren't interested in what the Rebbe said. But anyway, Herzog recognized what they call today the Murex trunculus, the Murex snail, which is what the tcheles that I wear and others wear today is made from. He wasn't comfortable with that either, but for a technical reason, because it didn't produce the color blue that he felt the right color. However, what they showed long after Herzog had died, Herzog did all his experimentation in a science lab. That's where he worked, in a lab. Okay, and when you do the process in the sunlight, Itaka comes out the color that he would have wanted. He just didn't know that. Okay, because he did it under lab lights, and it wasn't the same as sunlight. He had another objection because the Gemara said earlier, if you remember, it said it looked like the sea. Well, it doesn't look like the sea. It's not the color of the sea. But it is the color of the seabed. It is the color of the seabed. The snail blends in with the seabed. So it does fit in with the description of the Gemara. And we already said that dog doesn't have to mean fish. It can mean a sea creature. In any event, so I've heard, so, and about 30 years ago, a group of people married to Saul, my brother was involved. That's what's close to my heart. You know, he runs the operation today. There's a big Talmud Chacham at the head of it, Rav Tevger, written Sfarim on the subject. In any event, they basically reinstituted or rediscovered the tcheles. The question is, can you do that? Can you ask against the Radzina Rebbe? Can you ask against Rav Herzog? Can you ask against them? Can you do that? So one of the people who objected to the Radzina Rebbe's tchum, the Radzina Rebbe came back to Europe. He was all excited, not only for his own chassidim, but he wanted to spread the word. You know, so he consulted other rabbonim. One of the rabbonim he consulted or spoke to was the Beis Halevi. Now, we don't have anything in the writings of the Beis Halevi, what he responded, but in the Radzina Rebbe's correspondence, we do have with the Beis Halevi. And the family of the Beis Halevi, the Soloveitchik family, the Rav Soloveitchik from Moyo, is named Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik after his great-grandfather, the Beis Halevi. So one of his essays in Source 50, one of his shurim, this is Shurim L'Zecha Abba Mori Zal Krach Aleph, an essay called Shnei Sugei Masoret. He says, Yadua Mashi, Source 50, Yadua Mashi Ira Ben Zikne Agon of Yosef Dov Halevi, Uveina Admor Agon Miradzim. We know, it's well known, the exchange that my grandfather, Yosef Dov, the Beis Halevi, had with the Gon for Admor is Chassidish Rebbe. Admor stands for Adonainu Moreinu Rabbeinu, right? That's what they call the Rebbe. They were the Admor Miradzim, regarding Tcheles. Because he was Mechadish Tcheles, and he told those Chassidim to wear it, and he was tempted with various proofs that it was right, and so on. But Rabbi Yosef Dov Tan, my great-grandfather, the Beis Halevi, argued, it doesn't matter. She'ein rayos u'svaros yicholos lochiach shum dovar b'mili d'shaych l'masoros. This was the Rav's understanding and the Soloveitchik family's understanding of the tradition of the Beis Halevi, that you cannot, I don't care how many rayos you have and archaeological finds and scientific evidence you have, you can't reconstitute something that depends on the Masorah. And the color of the Tcheles and the creature which the Tcheles comes from has to be from a unbroken, ongoing Masorah. And if you don't have that Masorah, even if you're right, that doesn't substitute for the Masorah. And you can't reconstitute it once it's been out, the chain's been broken, so to speak. Okay? She'ein sasvara machriya ima Masorah atzma. Okay, that's the way it is. And that's how he felt you have to be a noeg. And therefore, you can bring all the rayas you want. It's been lost to the Masorah. I went to an argument with somebody about it. I said, what's the Masorah for that? Okay, what's the Masorah? The Inin of Masorah. But okay, this is the Rav Soloveitchik's understanding of the Beis Halevi, and therefore it doesn't make a difference. You cannot, I don't care how many rayas you have, you cannot put it on today. Shtikl raya, the Rav brought for this. There is a Gemara, this way his family understood it, and they were b'chaim. And so on the Pasuk in Parsha Shmini, the Pasuk doesn't matter. Perik Yud Aleph from Vayikra Pasuk Mem Beis, says, Kol Holecha Gachon. Talking about the creepy crawling creatures for kashrus purposes and tumah purposes. Anyway, the word gachon, which means stomach, in the Torah, there's a big vav. You know, some letters in the Torah are larger. So the vav is a big vav. Why? It's the one in Kedushin, Laman or Beis, Laman or Laman or 52 says, I'll tell you why, because that's the halfway point in letters of the Torah. The vav in gachon is the halfway point of the Torah. So the Gemara asks, so, well, which half is it part of? It's part of the first half or the second half? The Gemara says, what do you mean? So it says, well, what's the problem? Take out a Sefer Torah and then count the letters yourself. That may take some time, but take out, figure it out. So they did it. And they counted it. Okay, but it doesn't help because we're not Bucky, but Chaseris v'Yaseris anu lo b'kinin. Okay, certain letters, words are spelled a certain way. Sometimes you have a Vav in it, like in the word, I don't know, Olam. So Ayin Vav Lamed Lamed, but Olam Kof spelled Ayin Lamed Mem, and the O is just a vowel without the Vav. Or the U sound sometimes is a without a Vav or with a Vav, with the U, right? Or the E sound sometimes is just a dot, some of the dot followed by a Yud. So that's called Malay and Chaser. So we may have mistakes with that. Okay, so we don't know. So that's why you can't tell just by counting. That's the Gemara. And Gemara says that's why these experts, these original Tamil Chachom, are called Sofrim. They counted all the letters. That's Rashi's point. Okay. Based on this, the Shulchan Aruch has a din. Orchaim sim kuf mem gimel sif dalet. Not reading inside, but again, the details aren't important for the next source. It's just to know in general what it says. The Torah talks about what happens if there's a psul in the Sefer Torah. We've all been there. When they found some problem in the Torah, they had to take out a different Torah. So when do you take out a different Torah? So if there's a mistake in the Torah, you got to take out another one. But Ramor writes in the third line there, Hodom otzien acher davka shenim tzotos gomor. It's got to be a real mistake. Of a mishum chaseris v'yaseris ein lahotzi acher. Missing a vav, and you can still read the word straight, doesn't change it. You don't have to take out a Sefer Torah. That's the Ramah. So the discussion in Poskim about it, not our issue now, but the Rav said that Rav Chaim, his father Moshe, didn't agree with that. And or because it's not that we're not sure. Our Sefer Torah, we are sure. But since the tradition was lost, then we can't reconstitute it. That's what the Gemara meant. Okay? If we don't know what the... Vav was for, it doesn't matter if you count it. You can't reconstitute something from the Masorah. That's what the Rav thought based on that Beis Halevi. Okay? However, now I'd like to vote to the rest of the Shia. However, there's seeming evidence that, let's just say, not everyone agrees with that approach. That in fact, we can sometimes derive things from other sources. In Gemara and Megillah, Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph 55, where the Chachamim learned the meaning of several words from the colloquial usage by apparently non-Jews. Okay? So the Mishnah says in Megillah, the Kikarala Seirugin Yatza. If you read the Megillah piece by piece, what is Seirugin? Kara Seirugin. So by the time of the Gemara, they know what Seirugin meant. It says you Yotze Mikra Megillah. If you read the Psukim Seirugin, I just told you what it means. Right, two Psukim now, and another Pasuk later, another Pasuk later, as long as you read the whole thing. But they didn't know what Seirugin meant. Lo Haviyad Rabbanon, my Seirugin. They didn't know what it meant, what the word meant. You know, languages change. English also changes, right? I mean, our English today is not the same as it was 50 years ago. It's certainly not the same as it was in Shakespeare's time. And Shakespeare's English is not the same as Chaucer's English. The languages evolved. So in Hebrew also, and in Aramaic also, so they know what Seirugin was until they heard the Amta, the Bei Rebbe, the maid in Rebbe's house, said when the rabbis were coming in, they came in one by one, why are you coming in Seirugin? Oh, that's what the word Seirugin meant. They heard it, they heard from her. And the Gemara gives us several other types of examples, a chalugas, a type of plant, and salsala utorech. I quoted the psukim. I mean, I don't want to spend a ton of time on it, but you know, I quoted the psukim in the subsequent sources. Okay, again, it's the Gemara Megillah Yudches Amar Aleph. Okay, Pasuk 57, Mishlei, Perek Dalet, Pasuk says, Salsula Usro Mecha. Right? What is salsa? They know what it meant. And they saw somebody combing their hair, twirling their hair, a girl or some man twirling his hair. Oh, it said, Misalsa, twirling, turning around. We turn our Kadosh Baruch Hu in and out where we exalt him and so on. Or Pasuk Yeshaya, I'll skip the one, but all these same ideas. Yeshaya, Perek Dalet, Pasuk of Gimel. It says, Vita Tesia Bimatatatea. Funny words. What does it mean, Yeshaya? So they heard the maid was the person was looking for a broom and used the word tatayah, it's a broom. And Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying, I'll sweep you out and, you know, in the exile and so on. So they're all things which were learned by Chazal from, you know, expressions, rather not from Torah sources, so to speak. Okay, unless you want to argue they were maids in Jewish homes, but okay, that's maybe what the Rav said, but it's questionable if that's what it meant. Okay, another example. Parshat Tetzaveh, the Torah. So question, I'm sorry, what's that? Oh. Parshat Tetzaveh, the Torah says, Shmos Perek Chaf Ches Pasuk Lamed Vav, 60. Make the tzitz, vasisa tzitz of Torah. Tzitz had to have the golden head plate on the forehead of the Kohen Gadol. And it has the words on it, the Pasuk ends, Kodesh Lashem. So Gemara in Shabbos, Samach Gimel Abayz, also beginning of Sukkah. How is it written? The words Kodesh Le Yud Kei Vav Kei, Hashem's full name. How is it on one line, on two lines? How are the letters divided up? So it's a machlokas. The Gemara in Shabbos, Samach Gimel Beis. Again, the difference is not pivotal to us, but the Gemara tells a story there, okay, that Amalazar Rabbi Yossi, Ani Re'isia Re'isia Be'ir Romi. I saw the tzitz when I went to Rome. You know, we know that the Romans took away stuff from the Beis HaMikdash. We all know about the Arch of Titus, them carrying the menorah away, but the menorah wasn't the only thing they carried, and they carried away other things too. And somehow Amalazar Rabbi Yossi had permission to see it, and he said, I saw the tzitz, and it said like this on it. It said it was written this way, the tzitz that I saw. Okay, Ani Re'isia Romi, Rashi says in 62, Shabbos Samach Gimel Beis, Shenichnas La'otz HaMelech, allowed to go in, and Gemara has a whole story, whatever it is. Okay, so the Rambam, Nilchus Klei HaMikdash, Perek Tes Halacha Aleph 63, Kesed Ma'aseh Tzitz, Oseh Tashel Zov, make gold and so on, had to be this width and so on, and you had two lines, Kodesh Hashem, the word Kodesh on the top, and Hashem, Kodesh on the bottom rather than Hashem above it, because nothing would be above Hashem's name. But if you wrote it the other way on one line, it's also okay. And the Kesef Mishnah explained, you know why? Because of Elazar Yossi saw it that way. Again, we took his quote-unquote archaeological evidence. He saw it. All right, he's a Jew. He had a Talmud Chacham, a Tana. But still, it was an outside source that he saw it in. The Ramban, in his Chidushim Techul and Samach Beis Mebeis, 65. Ramban is talking, the Gemara there is talking about how you distinguish or figure out which birds are kosher and which are not kosher. Okay, the Torah never gives you any physical signs. The Torah just lists off 21 specifically, and they learn out 24 birds which are not kosher, implying everything else is. The problem is we don't know what all those things are. So any given bird, maybe it's one of those things. Many, we don't know what they are. So therefore, the Gemara tries to figure out certain physical characteristics, even though the Torah doesn't mention it. Anyway, the Ramban writes in his Chidushim Techul and Samach Beis and Beis, Dilmasra Akasha Kasavti, 65, I started to experiment with different birds. Okay, Ra'isi Darke Kulam Chazarti lived oak ba'ofos. Tafasti Tchilek ba'or la'shocha. First, I got myself a black raven, and I studied it and so on. And then old ba'dakti with a different type of bird and saw what it had at the stomach and the type of feet in a certain way and so on. Anyway, I'm not going to read all these things, but based on his scientific experimentations, Ramban said, therefore, I have to paskin like one group of like a Moshe Yosef and not like Rashi. Okay, he has to paskin one way because of his own experimentation. And we didn't reject the experimentation. There's a whole sugya, big discussion. I'll go through it quickly. It's brachas lamed vav mud beis go over lamed zayin and aleph, which focuses on what is the proper bracha on orez. Okay, on orez. Okay, so by things which come from the chamesh shmini dog and the five species of, you know, of grain, wheat, rye, oats, barley, and spelt. Then you have to make a bar mitzvah to wash and make a mitzvah. But I say, if you have a cake or you make a bar mitzvah and alamichi afterwards. But it says about orez and dochon. Okay, so the Gemara says that's different, and it says orez you make a bar mitzvah before, but not after bar nefashos after. That's what emerges in that sugi and brachas. What is orez? Okay, modern Hebrew it's rice. You look in Rashi in 67 brachas lamidzano alav. Orez is millet, not rice. Okay, and dochen is something else. Tosis, there in brachas lamidzano alav, source 68 disagrees. Dibamasi Rashi pirish orez mill. No, yesh mefarshim rizo rice. Okay, and millet and dochen is mill. Dochen is millet. So, question exactly what is orez? Okay, and orez the big nafkun alochas. The next Tosis points out Yufta points out rice. The bracha is bar mitzvahs and bar nefashos afterwards. So the Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Chaim in Reish Ches Siv Zayin, it says that if you cook rice, okay, and you make a thing out of it, then you say bar mitzvahs and bar nefashos afterwards. But the Magen Avraham in Sivkot and Tes says, you know, orez is rice, but some say it's a machlokas and maybe orez is millet, and therefore, you know, it's a good idea. Don't eat rice by itself. Eat it as part of a meal after hamotz. You don't have to worry about the bracha. All right, the Mishnah Berurah in Sivkot and Chof Ches says rice is dochen, rice dochen. Here is below, you know that again. The Yesh again. Some say rice is rice and dochen is millet. Some say the way around. They said therefore Yesh Machmir not to eat them other than as part of a suda. The Aruch HaShulchan already says in some Reish Ches Chaval. By the way, the Mishnah Berurah himself also concludes that we say Orez is rice because that's what the Vilna Gaon said. Orez is rice and that's it. Aruch HaShulchan also says it's in Reish Ches Sivchaf Aleph in 72. Orez is rice. There was a discussion about it, but we assume Orez is rice. Interesting. Look in the Tshuva from Rav Sternberg, Rav Moshe Sternberg. Tshuva San Hagos Chelak Aleph Sim Kuf Pei Vav 73. Nishalti al Orez rice. Do we rely that Orez is rice and Bar Mitzvah, or maybe should be machmer not to eat it other than as part of a meal? So he tells a story, and he gives the answer that it's rice. And he says, Shamano in the second line of the next page, Shagroza Tzalochik Shebodak. He did an investigation. He looked into it scientifically. What is Orez? Okay, and how do we look at it scientifically? Fascinating. There's a Mishnah in Baba Metzia, Mem Amad Aleph, the Torah Mafkid Paris Eitzel Chavero, 74. You know, without the details now, but the Mishnah says that if someone leaves fruit by me and I got to return it to you, yeah, but you know, if it's in the olden days, especially, we don't have storage like today. Bugs and other things, animals will eat part of it. So you would calculate the chisorin. If you leave it for X amount of time, you're going to get back less because it's not because I was negligent or anything else, but chisronos, right? They might lose a little bit, you know, from it evaporates if it's a certain type of thing, whatever. But other things, animals will eat and so on. So the Mishnah Bava Metzia says it depends what the thing is as to how much chisorin you can allow for. So it mentions Orez. The Mishnah says that in 74, Tisha Chatzi Kabin Lakur. 9.5 of this measurement per ton or whatever it was. Okay, and Dochen was different. So the Groz, that says about your story, did an experiment. And it turns out that Orez is rice. What the Mishnah says about Orez corresponds to rice. So there you see once again, Rabosai. And by the way, that's, you know, we look in Hilchot Shelo Begadim, Perakei Halacha. Hey, there are passings like this that, you know, you have this important shear to know how much you have to give back. Shulchan Aruch also, and Choshen Mishpats and Rei Sadi Bei, Sif Yud Aleph. Okay, so there again, the scientific experimentation gave us insight into understanding something relevant to halacha lemaisa. Okay, the famous Ramban regarding the machzah shekel. Pasuk says at the beginning of Parshas Kisisa, Shmos Parakalamet, Pasuk Gimel 78. You have to give every year a machzah shekel. Okay, how much is a shekel worth? So Ramban has a discussion there in the beginning of Parshas Kisisa, Parakalamet, Pasuk Gimel 79. He quotes the name of Rashi. I printed the Rashi below. The Rashi is in Parshas Mishpatim. Source 8 is a Pasuk Mishpatim, it's mentioned Shekel, Perkafala Pasuk Lamed Beis, if you injure an Eved, okay, injures an Eved, he has to pay Shlosh Shkolim. So there Rashi says, what is a Shekel? It gives you an amount. Okay, a Chatzi Unkyo, Lemishkal Yosher Shalkolim, Chatzi Unkyo. Ramban, in 79, you can look at it, again, the details aren't important, but Ramban says it wasn't that amount. Okay, he said, that's what Rashi says. He disagrees. He disagrees based on Gemaras and says it's different. However, Ramban later wrote an addendum. I printed it in 82. Ramban, Ha'ora b'inyan ha-shekel. He says, Baruch Hashem ad tosh zachisi vasi la'ako. Ramban went to Eretz Yisrael later in his life. Ramban in the mid-1200s had a famous debate in Spain against an apostate Jew and Pabul Kushani who tried to show from the Talmud that the Christianity is the right religion. So Ramban had a debate, and the Ramban, won the debate. We have his records. He kept his records of the debate, a diary. It's available, the Disputation of Barcelona. And the Ramban clearly won the debate. In fact, the King of Aragon, who of course was not on the Ramban side, he was a Christian, said something to the effect of, never have I heard such a wrong cause defended so brilliantly. But anyway, something along those lines. But the reward for the Ramban for winning the debate was that they didn't kill him. So he was allowed to leave the country and go to Eretz Yisrael. He went to Eretz Yisrael. So he writes over here, Berchani Hashem ad kol shachisi bosi la'ako. I came to Eretz Yisrael and eventually came to Yerushalayim. He wrote that he kept a diary of that too. He said, I couldn't find a minyan in Yerushalayim, you can imagine. That's why they started a shul. There's a Ramban shul, in the old city there. Anyway, but be that as it may, so he writes that he saw a shekel. He found the shekel. He found the old coin in Eretz Yisrael. And lo and behold, Rashi's right. So Ramban changes opinion. Ramban changes opinion because he found a shekel from the olden days. And the measurement and the weight was like Rashi said, not like he thought. So therefore, again, archaeological evidence. The Abarbanel quote, the Abarbanel, there in Kisisa, Parakalam, and Pasuk Yudal, 83, my quotes the Rashi, but the Ramban, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, don't worry about what he says there, Abarbanel, ki kvar hoda, be gross of, shesholach Meretz Yisrael. He already admitted in a letter that he sent from Meretz Yisrael that his son, that he saw the shekel code. It's like Rashi said, the Tashbeit, Chelekim, Chavob, also says what's now agreed, and Afkamina for Pidyon HaBen, and so on. So that's another example. Okay, another example, tefillin. We know that there's a machlokas, Gemara in Menachas Lamed Dalam and Beis Machlokas, relating to the order of the four parshas in tefillin. Okay, order. So the famous machlokas, Rashi there in Menachas Lamed Dalam and Beis, against Rabbeinu Tam there in Menachas Lamed Dalam and Beis, Dumasu HaKori. Rashi says the order is, and on the Shalyad, of course, it's one big piece of parchment. Shalyad, it's Shalrosh, it's four separate things, four separate places, but the order is the same. So when you're looking at the reader, at the wearer, rather, I'm looking at you wearing it. So the order is Kadesh, V'hayach, Yachos, Shema, V'hayam, Shemo. In other words, the cast in order of appearance, it's the way it appears in the Torah. Kadesh is first, V'hayam, Shemo, Shema. I'm sorry, V'hayach, Yachos, Shema, V'hayam, Shemo. But when the Tom switches the last two, and he says the order is, okay, Kadesh, and Shema, the two Bahayas are next to each other. Why? Not our topic now. That's the Machlokas Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. The Machlokas predated Rashi Rabbeinu Tam, but it's known as Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. That's why I know that some Chassidim and others put on two pair of tefillin. Somebody, some Sfarim, they put on two at the same time. Okay, to be able to both Shitas. Okay, so the Smag, Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, Essen Chof Beis, 88 quotes a wild story. He says, in Eretz Yisrael and other places, there are no egg like Rabbeinu Shlomo, like Rashi, and Rabbeinu Moshe, the Rambam, the order that I mentioned before. And they found a letter from Eretz Yisrael was sent, Shenoflo Bima Shal Kevi Yechezkel, that a wall caved in by the grave of Yechezkel, wherever exactly it is, and they found their old tefillin, okay, buried there, buried Sheamus in a grave. It's not a new practice. So they found in the Kevi Yechezkel, when the thing collapsed, they found old pairs of tefillin, and they opened them up, and lo and behold, it was like Rashi's way. Not like Rabbeinu Tam's way. Okay, so that's a stickle raya, again, from archaeological evidence. The Maharil writes in Siman Kuf Lamed Zayin of his Tshuvas in Ozvav in 89, said that's why he doesn't feel you have to wear two pairs. We can dismiss the other view. We can rely on what was found in that Nat Geniza and so on, that Sheamus there in the Kever of the Kever of Yechezkel. It's interesting, the Drisha makes a suggestion there, the name of some, Siman Lamed Dalet Ozalef there in Archaim in 90. The Drisha makes a suggestion, he says, well, no, there's no raya from there because maybe that's why the tefillin were in the Geniza because they were written in the wrong orders. They had to bury them. Okay, the Bach dismisses that. But anyway, that's another thing. Nobody said, oh, but we can't reconstitute and so on. We can't use evidence in there. They didn't say that. Okay. In Parshas Vayishlach, the Torah speaks about B'nai Seir HaChor, Perek Lam and Vav HaBereishis, Pasuk Chav, B'nai Seir HaChor Yoshvei HaAretz. What do you mean Yoshvei HaAretz? Right? They live in the land? Of course they live in the land. Where else do you live? Everyone lives in the land. So Rashi says that they knew Abasenu Darsha, they knew very well ins and outs of land. They knew things about land. They knew things about the earth, planting and so on and so forth. People who grew up with that. My father, during the war, lived in whatever it was. He knew, he could tell you, impress my kids once, me too. He was telling, oh, there's a potato under here. He was able to tell. He was right, there was a potato under there. Okay, I couldn't tell, but he was able to tell. People know the land. That's the Gemara in Shabbos, Pehevet Aleph. What do you mean they knew that they lived in the land. Of course they live in the land. Where do you live? On the moon? So the Gemara said, no, they knew things. And based on what they said, Chazal had a tradition relating to Kelayim. They're not allowed to plant certain things in close proximity to each other. Chazal had a tradition, in X number of space, you can plant X number of different plants. You don't have to worry, they're going to nourish each other. Kimle l'rabbanan, the Gemara's expression on top of Behemoth Aleph 94. Kimle l'rabbanan, they had a tradition. Where did it come from? So when I said it came from these non-Jews who knew the land, but they used it for halacha l'maisa purposes. The Rambam in 96, Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, Perek Yud-Zayin, Halacha Chaf Dalet. Rambam writes that a lot of calculations relating to astronomy, we don't have anymore the books, the ancient books of Chazal. Okay? He says, well, we do have Chachmas that took us in Machia Chibur with Chachma Yavon. We have from the Greeks their astronomy. We can use it. Asarim Shechibur Chachma Yisrael Shemanavim, Ibnay Yisrael, Lo Yigiyot, we don't have them anymore. We can bring proofs and things from other sources. The Ramah writes in a tshuva, Siman Zion, somebody yelled at him for quoting, you know, from philosophers and so on. He says, it's not a problem. The truth is the truth. And we can bring people I brought from the Chachmas HaYavonim, the philosopher. Okay, he says it's okay. We can learn various different things from them also, even though it's not from a Jewish source. And there are more and more riots to this. It seems to me the Chassam Sofer, Anida Daf Yud Ches Manav, talking about a female anatomy, says that we know from Metzius and so on, we know from what we have in front of us, what doctors can tell us. And in the Tshuvas, Chelek Ardei Simon Ayin Ches, okay, and in Chelek Ardei Simon Shin Lam Ches, two other places you can take a look where the Chassam Sofer talks about, you know, eggs in one place and a fetus in another place. And he said we can derive things from Rofei's Manenu. Rofei's Manenu, or at the end of 99, Chachmei Hagoyim HaKadmonim, right, referring to that Gemara in Shabbos, but the people knew the earth very well, how to plant things, understood the soil and everything else. And 100, Simon Shin Lamed Ches, he writes, well, things are known are Rofei's Manenu. Okay, one other source, and then we'll wrap up, from regarding tefillin itself, a fascinating story. There is a machlokas, Beisham Beisila, how many strings on each corner of the tzitzis? We have four strings folded over eight. Okay, that's Beis Hillel. Okay, that's Beis Shammai. I mean, okay, Beis Hillel said three, hold it over six. Look in that 101, Menachos, Mem Aleph Mabeis, Tanar Banach, Kamachut, and Osem, Beis Shammai, and Dalet, Beis Hillel, Omrim, Gimel. And then Rashi explains, fold it over. So Gemara tells a story in Baba Basra, Ayin Gimel with Beis going over to Ayin Dalet and Aleph, one of the guzmos of Rabba Bar Chana. Rabba Bar Chana, in the Gemara there in Baba Basra, has all kinds of strange, wild adventures. Goes to different places and sees wild things, have all kinds of strange experiences. The Maharsha and the Maral and the Agodas try to figure out what the Gemara is communicating. Again, not the details now, but he tells one story. The end of on Gimel Beis in 103, it says, "Ta ach v'loch Meisei Midbar." Let me come show you where some of the people who died, the Meisei Midbar, are buried. This Rashi says in 104, "Soche Yishmael, an Arab, a nomad, traveling salesman, you know, nomadic tribesman. Okay, let me show you. I know where some of the Meisei Midbar buried. So he took them to such a place, some sort of a cave. He brought them in. Sure enough, they found them. They were buried there and so on. And they had their talisim, their garments. So Rabba Bar Chana, tzitzis, so he cut off a corner. He wanted to take it with him. Okay, bring it back to the Beis Medrash. Then he couldn't get out. The door wouldn't open up. So the Arab asked him, "Do you take anything with you?" "Yeah, I got some." "No, you can't take anything out. It's like, you know, when you leave Target, you got those plastic things that they won't let you out the door." Right? So it wouldn't let him out the door. Okay. So he came back to the Beis Medrash and he told him the whole story. And the other Chacham, the Gemara says, yelled at him. You fool. Why don't you tell you? You want to know? We passed Beis Shammai Sil, so you should have looked. Don't just cut to the look and take account yourself. Okay. They yelled at him. Okay. Why don't you take a look? I think they flipped to the back page. Okay. And again, you can look through the story. But nobody said, "Oh, well, that wouldn't count because it's an archaeological find." Okay, the tradition's been broken or lost. So I think there's ample evidence. The Maharil writes in one of his Tshuvas, in just a couple of minutes, I'll finish up. Tshuvas Maharil Chadosh Simon Hay, he writes this Os Beis in 106. We could do it today, but Kal Hoya Lasus Chelos. We can figure out what it is. The Maharil writes explicitly. If we can figure out what the Chalosin is, we can make Chelos today. Radvaz also writes in the Tshuva 107, Chelek Beis and Top Reish Pei Hay. Give an F Shoshadi, we don't know where it is, but we can find it. So they're not saying like this Beis Halevi, according to Rav Soloveitchik's explanation, that, you know, there had to be an unbroken chain. Okay, so again, I want to make it clear that I'm not, you know, Rav Soloveitchik is Rav Soloveitchik, and the family had that tradition, that's what the Beis Halevi meant, and the Beis Halevi is one to be reckoned with. However, if you look in 108, and that's the Sefer from the author, Adzina Rebbe himself, the Ein, one of his from, the Ein HaTcheles, in Akdoma, he quotes what he understood from the Beis Halevi. Okay, look in 108, Hagonav Bezin Bristolita. Okay, and he, you know, listen, the arguments, and he basically said, you look in the language of the Ein HaTcheles there, not like the Rav and his family understood the Beis HaLevi scene, but rather that, in fact, meaning If there were something that were lost, you don't need a Masorah to reconstitute it. What the Beis Halevi meant is something that we always had and had easy access to, and it wasn't used for generations, then we have to assume that's not it. What we might call a negative Masorah. In other words, the cuttlefish is a well-known fish. Everybody knew about the cuttlefish. It wasn't odd. It wasn't rare. And for so many centuries, they didn't use it. The Beis Halevi said, if they didn't use it for all those centuries, then it's not the right thing. But if you can come up with something that we can show that people didn't know about for a lengthy period of time, and now you can produce scientific evidence that shows that it's right, then maybe the Beis Halevi would agree that it's okay. That's how the Radziner, okay, so the Beis Halevi's Taina was with the Radziner, okay, which he explains. I mean, he doesn't agree with them, but he explains it. He says that, you know, if languages take a look at it, okay, he says, if they knew about it, okay, and then the fourth line of 108, give me the next minute, I'll finish up. Our immediate answer is didn't wear it, even though they knew about the cuttlefish. That's a riot that it's not. We have a tradition that this is not it. What's a tradition? They knew about this fish and didn't use it. So it's like a tradition that it's a wrong thing. We have a tradition that it's the wrong thing. What we're suggesting here, it's not me, but people suggesting that the Beis Halevi, if there was something that the Chachamim didn't know about, they didn't know about this murex. It wasn't easily accessible. There wasn't archaeological finds that they knew about or how to make a dye from it that wasn't known in you know, for many centuries it wasn't known. So that the Beis Halevi would agree. Or maybe if you can prove that that's right, then it's something else. That's certainly the way Rabbi Eliashiv also understood that his Chuvas, Kovitz Chuvas Chelek Aleph Simon Beis, finish up in 109. That's also the way he understood the Beis Halevi was the way it's from the Enat Chelis. Right? It's like there's a Masorah that it's not the right thing, but if you can come up with something that is the right thing, maybe you feel differently. And in fact, and we'll finish with this, the Beis Halevi himself, in a Tshuva, he does talk about Chelis, not about this topic, but a Chelik Aleph Simon Beis of his Tshuvas, he suggests, the Chiddush also, that if you know, if you're convinced that it's a Chelis, you have Chelis, you don't put it on, then you're in violation of Bal Tigra, you know, taken away from a mitzvah. You're wearing only white, you're supposed to wear Chelis. You don't believe it's the right Chelis, okay. But if you would, then it would be Bal Tigra. All right, and the same for Olas Tomid in our Chaim Simon Tess in Cotton Gimel. He says, you know, Bizman Hazel, we don't have Tchelis, but he writes in 111, Shema Yizgala Tchelis, maybe it'll be revealed. And if Yeshua Lakutna, in his Chuvas Chelik, our Chaim Simon Beis, Chuvas Yeshua Smalko, 112, also again, we don't have a Yediya Brura, we don't know for sure, and maybe it was Nignaz, and he quotes some of the sources we saw, okay, but it says it's possible that maybe they are right, maybe. And we'll end with this. Maybe the fact that we read, he's not writing this now, but even today, maybe that's a sign talk of the Geula, right? Shemisnotes HaGeula. So I can't recommend it. He was talking back then. I can't recommend it, but I can't say you're wrong. Maybe this is a sign of the Geula. So I think that those people who do wear Tchelis on their tzitzis today, again, with due respect of salvation, understanding of the Beis Halevi, I think there's ample evidence that others, you know, have marshaled to show that, you know, even if there's not an actual Masorah and the Masorah is broken, you have evidence and so on. I will tell you that, and I'll finish with this, that when my brother-in-law, you know, who works in this and runs this many, many years ago, or more than 30 years ago, kind of convinced me and showed me all about the Tchelis, I answered, I can't put it on because my Rebbeim don't do it. You know, but then once Sir Herschel Schechter Shlita started to wear it, my brother-in-law called me up because, guess what? You're out of excuses. You know, so, but others also, Rabbi Tendel Zichron Baruch Hu wore it, and then other prominent Rabbanim wear, other prominent Rabbanim don't, and we'll see how it plays out. But anyway, that's an overview of the question of Masorah and Tchelis. I wish everybody a guten Shabbos.
Thank you.